Subscribe to The Spectator in our end of lockdown sale and get 10 weeks of the magazine in print and online for the price of one. Not only that, but we'll also send you a bottle of Pimm's worth £25 absolutely free. That's 10 weeks of The Spectator and a bottle of Pimm's, all for just £4.95. Hurry though, this offer ends on Monday, 19th of July. Go to spectator.co.uk/sale.
Hello and welcome to a special Saturday edition of Coffee House Shots. I'm James Seif and I'm joined by Fraser Manson. Now Fraser, this is our last Saturday Shots before the restrictions go, the so-called unlocking day on Monday. But it's not the joyous occasion that I think many people thought it would be. There's a distinct nervousness in Whitehall, a nervousness that has only been added to by Chris Whitty's warnings on Thursday that, you know, if the hospital numbers are not topping out in 5, 6, 7, 8 weeks' time, the government might have to look again at what is going on, with the clear implication that some restrictions might have to come back. So is this unlocking going to be an irreversible moment, as Boris Johnson used to promise? Or is there a chance that we're back in restrictions, perhaps as early as late August, early September?
The golden rule of COVID, I think, is that you should rule nothing out ever. I think Boris Johnson, when he was saying irreversible, he did set it at the time to try to almost apologise for how late all of these deadlines were. He was saying, look, I know lockdown's been extended for far longer than you would like, but at least when it lifts, it will lift forever. That was partly the sweetener when he came up with the roadmap back in February. And now he's not using words like irreversible. I mean, Sajid Javid, is funny, in his first few days as health secretary, used that language. He's now dropped it, partly because that's standard politics. If you're a politician, you don't want to say that anything will never say never, golden rule. But obviously, they don't want to go back to that. But we can now see that Chris Whitty is absolutely terrified. And he is talking about very gloomy scenarios. And in the old days, I think Chris Whitty would have got together with Matt Hancock and Michael Gove and probably forced some compromise. Now, with Hancock gone, that apparatus simply isn't there. So Whitty is left to go to the Science Museum and come up with messages which are contrary to that given by the Prime Minister and the Health Secretary. He obviously wants to rein in the current optimism. Of course, what Whitty says is true. We're all going on the basis, I'm going on the basis anyway, that Bristol University's PCCF project, that's the model which I have found the most accurate, is broadly correct. That model says that we're going to get up to about 1,200 hospital admissions a day. That's more than twice what we're getting at the moment. So in other words, things will get considerably worse, but they will peak out at the beginning of August, and then they will start to fall. So therefore, Chris Whitty's scenario, where hospitalizations are still rising in 6 or 7 weeks' time, ought not to be possible. Now, the Bristol model has got a very interesting premise, and it is that this virus, this Delta variant, is going to infect pretty much every single susceptible person. And there's nothing we can do about this. This isn't to do with unlocking. It's to do with the amount of freedom that we have at the moment, even before Super Monday, as nobody's calling it. So if that happens, and if Bristol's correct, there won't be a winter wave. There won't be a Whitty scenario. We're going to be in for a very hairy few weeks, with cases surging, hospitalizations doubling, with deaths already at 30 a day. They're going to go a lot higher. But this whole thing ought to peak, as it seems to have peaked in Scotland, with hospitalizations at just being a quarter of what they were in the second wave. Now, do you remember, James, when Kate Andrews was beating me up a few weeks ago?
I do indeed.
Right. Now, ultimately, wait, we're going to bring our producer in. Like Sam Holmes, right? You've never been on a podcast before, but you remember the fun Kate Andrews had with me, yeah?
Which time?
Well, you're right. She beat me up several times. But I was arguing, basically, in defense of prolonging the reopening, delaying it from 21st of June to the 19th of July. Now, I think I personally feel completely vindicated in that, because I was... James, what are you making a face for?
No, I just feel Kate isn't here to argue with me, but carry on.
Well, and this is why I dare to come out with this. No, because I was saying at the time, the political expectation was way out of whack. Everybody was talking, it was the 21st of June, as if everything was on the way out, you could realize everything was going to be... No, that completely wasn't going to be the case. It was already clear that due to the Delta variant, unlocking was going to coincide with an absolute avalanche of cases and a third wave of hospitalizations. So you need a political narrative to unlock into that sort of backdrop. They've now got one, they didn't have one before. And that's a scenario that we're now facing. Now, that extra time, which has allowed, for example, us to talk with a lot more certainty about unlocking. If we're unlocking on Monday, as we are, we've got very, very good reason to say, look, we think that the hospitalization to cases ratio is going to be a quarter of what it was at the peak in February. We've now got that information. We didn't have it last time. We can look at Scotland and we can say, look, Scotland's third wave is now on the way down. Their hospitalizations didn't get more than a quarter of a second peak, so maybe England's won't either. We've now got that information. We didn't have it last time. The witty scenario I haven't seen anybody come up with that mysteriously gets worse, but I wouldn't rule it out because I wouldn't rule anything out with COVID. This is why I think Sajid Javid is actually quite right to take away his irreversible language, because we do know about COVID, it always surprises us, and it might have a few more surprises left.
Now, Fraser, the government guidance, I think, reflects the kind of level of concern in Whitehall. You know, yes, masks are not going to be legally required, but the government is clearly supportive of public transport operators who want to require people to carry on wearing them, or shops that want to do the same.
That's a bit of a theme, isn't it? The government is supportive of anybody who wants to implement any restrictions, although, of course, the government themselves, heaven forbid, they implement restrictions. Isn't that a bit of a theme, James, that we're seeing? You know, the government isn't saying, it's not, its language is not, it's safe. It's almost as if it feels sort of tied to a decision it slightly regrets. And so it's actually giving support.
I think it's clear that the government would like people not to behave very differently on Sunday into Monday. And, you know, look at the advice on going back to the office. There's no, you know, it's the guidance against going back has gone, but there's no desire to rush people back to the office. There's no, you know, last summer even there was a kind of government effort to get civil servants back to their desks in Whitehall. That is not happening this time around. And I think the government would quite like Monday to come with a whimper rather than a bang. If on kind of Wednesday afternoon we turn to each other and say, well, you can't really sense much of a difference, can you? I think there would be a kind of quiet sigh of relief in Whitehall about that. But it does seem to me, politically, there were kind of two questions about the NHS, which was the NHS waiting list going to grow with the unlocking? Was kind of elective surgery going to end up getting cancelled? And secondly, was the NHS going to be overwhelmed to the extent that, you know, COVID patients in ambulances wouldn't be able to get into hospital? I think it now seems quite clear that the first scenario is going to happen, but the NHS waiting list will grow longer during this unlocking than it was before. But the second question, you seem quite, you know, the Spectator's Data Hub was highly commended in the press awards yesterday. You seem quite confident based on that data that we are not going to end up in the scenario of ambulances unable to take patients into hospital for critical care.
Well, again, I would look at Scotland as a useful indicator of what England might expect. In Scotland, you did have Nine Wells Hospital in Dundee, Raigmore Hospital, my native Inverness. They were both in some trouble. They had to delay scheduled operations. They had to go on what they call a code black. So yes, there were signs of the health service creaking, but we're talking about delaying operations. We weren't talking about anybody. Remember, at the peak of the first wave, 40% of NHS beds were empty. The NHS is actually very, very good at coping. The idea of the NHS not coping, I think, is a bit unfair on the NHS. I mean, right now, the Data Hub will show you that the number of COVID patients, they account for 1.2% of NHS beds. 8% of those beds are empty. So there is a lot more to go there. And if you look at the Bristol University modelling, if you look at the Warwick University modelling that's on Sage, you don't get to a scenario where that looks like serious pressure. Now, Witty might be right, something might change, but all the surprises we've seen so far in the data have been relatively pleasant surprises, with one exception. We're seeing more vaccinated people get sick with COVID. I was talking to my colleague Danielle earlier on, and she was saying that one of her relatives who was double vaccinated got COVID and had to call an ambulance, and the ambulance just gave them oxygen. He was okay. But this is a guy who was double vaxxed. I think we might have been running on this sort of rather false assumption that the double vaxxed are safe. that isn't the case. I think the figures show a 21% chance of getting COVID if you're double vaxxed, a far lower chance of getting seriously ill from it. I think if there's a nasty surprise, it might be in that area. How many vaccinated people are still testing positive? But we do know from the figures that those people are very, very likely to end up in hospital and even less likely to die.
And let's just turn to the politics for a moment. It strikes me that one of the things that the January lockdown that Boris Johnson announced didn't actually cause him that much political damage, partly because the public are cautious when it comes to COVID, but also because that January lockdown then coincided with the real stepping up of the UK vaccination programme. You know, there were regular days where record numbers of people were being vaccinated. The UK appeared to be kind of one of the leading countries in terms of vaccination. It strikes me that if you end up in a situation with restrictions having to be reimposed now, the public mood would be far more grim, because there wouldn't be that light at the end of a tunnel of vaccination. You know, we have, you know, 2/3 of adults are double vaccinated. And I think it strikes me that politically, this would be the most difficult set of restrictions to impose, both in terms of the public mood, but also in terms of Parliament. Do you think that's right?
Very much so. If we ended up reimposing restrictions, it would be a case of saying pretty much everything we've told you about COVID is wrong. Like right now, 95% of adults have got antibodies, so we're told. Is there really scope for that big an infection, as Chris Whitty seems to suggest, if those figures are correct? So right now, a route out of this, or a very expensive route out of this, was supposed to be the vaccination. And I can understand why the government is cautious, because who can look at any of these models with any confidence? I'm talking about Bristol simply because over the months, we at The Spectator have found it less unreliable than others. But if you talk to Professor Philip Thomas, the author of that model, even he wouldn't say it's accurate. Models, he says, are never accurate. They're sometimes useful, but they're never actually accurate. If Whitty is right, and we do put back restrictions, and the upshot in the run-up to winter, you really do struggle to see when these restrictions might ever end. And then there's the other thing. Like, take the pub down the road from us, for Two Chairmen. They didn't open on the 21st of June. Other pubs were due to open. They didn't. And the landlord there said he didn't trust the government. They were going to delay it. A lot of people are delaying coming back to the office for when the all clear has properly sounded. And this is the big question. We're not getting an all clear sounding on Monday, not one little bit. The government's words say one thing, its body language says another. And we're not getting an all clear because Whitty is holding out the prospect of yet another lockdown. So if you're a big company wondering whether to say to your staff, okay, party's over, get out of your back gardens, get back in the office, and if you're going to do a three-line whip, I'm not sure you would do it now because there still isn't that certainty. Now, back in February, we were sure that by the 21st of June, let alone the 19th of July, then COVID would have run its course and we would have that certainty, but the Delta variant has changed everything. Now, I'll tell you something. I'll venture an even more unpopular opinion, which Kate would absolutely shoot me for had she not gone off for a late lunch. I think the 19th of July is a bit too early. I would rather the government were to wait until such times as it were properly confident. Now, I almost feel like calling Kate down the phone so she can come and blast my head off here. But I'll tell you why, James. Because we have ended up still in the halfway house we are right now. The government committed to a date, 19th of July, but it's not properly committed to it. So as a result, we're getting vaccine passports. That's what's happening on Freedom Day. We're bringing in they were never on the menu before. They're only being brought now because the government is so terrified of its own deadline, it has to do everything it can think of to try to dampen the effect of this, including asking companies to use vaccine passports. I was always for... by the way, I think it's perfectly free. I think it's fine to reopen on the 21st. I think it's fine to reopen on Monday. But what I do not want is to live in a country where people are asked for their bio-identity. By the way, James, you disagree with me on this, but you've never said so in the podcast. So why don't you tell listeners now why you're actually quite relaxed about identity passports? And also, given this is a safe space, because Kate's not here.
I'm relaxed about certification in terms of offering people either a vaccine or a test, and that being sufficient. I wouldn't be comfortable if a test was a kind of purely vaccination. I think that combination of vaccination or a test is, I think, not an unreasonable requirement to get back to something closer to normality now. I mean, you were talking about when you think the all clear will sound. I don't think the all clear is sounding until April of next year. I think concerns about what could happen in terms of flu and other respiratory illnesses this winter means that I don't think that the government are going to be fully confident. Confident enough to start, you know, saying, today I have written to all permanent secretaries urging them to get their staff back to their desks as soon as possible. I don't think that kind of stuff is happening until we're through the winter. And I think the question is, how do we live, as you put it, in this halfway house between now and then? I think certification, tests and vaccine combination, I think is one of the ways that one could do that.
But you're relaxed about the civil liberties argument. You're relaxed about the idea of employers demanding of their employees into the medical history of...
Lots of employers at the moment are demanding that people have tests before they come into the office. I don't, you know...
Outside of government, it's not happening that much.
No, I think there's quite a lot of places. I think people who come into lots of big office spaces, especially shared office spaces, this is a requirement. You know, right. you need to have tested negative at some point in the previous period.
So you're saying that a horse is bolted then?
Yes. I also think that the combination offers people who wish to maintain kind of privacy about whether they've taken the vaccine or not, do have another route in these tests, which are now quick. And I think it is about what is the alternative. And I think the alternative... I mean, look, if you want to know what people in government are, I think, most worried about, yeah, it is nightclub reopenings. And that is because if you want to look at a spectacular rise in COVID cases right now, look at the Dutch chart. It is almost a
factor of five,
vertical, right? And the view is that it was, for which Mark Rutte, the Dutch Prime Minister, said this was a mistake. You know, it was the reopening of nightclubs that has led to this surge. Now, no one wants to go to a nightclub and maintain social distance and wear a mask. I think that the combination of certification for those places is actually a compromise, which is, you know, look, these businesses can open, but people either have to be double vaccinated or have a negative test to come in. I think the alternative is not having them open at all. And so that's why I am more relaxed about it than you are.
Right, but as we've seen with nightclubs, I think most of them don't intend to ask for
certification. Yeah, no, I think I saw some data out, some kind of survey data out today suggesting that 8 in 10 won't answer
it. And good luck to the 2 in 10 who do, because I'm not sure the clientele, the vast majority of whom will not be vaccinated, will be particularly bothered to go and take a test.
I think it's a spontaneous... I mean, this is the thing. It dinks a spontaneous economy.
Right. So we seem to be landing there, not in Freedom Day, nor in lockdown, but in this sort of halfway.
We are in this grey area, and I think that there will be shades of grey to life, I think, until April.
Until April. Because here's the thing. Like, again, let's go back to the Bristol hypothesis, that everybody who is susceptible gets infected by the autumn, pretty much.
Look, I think that is correct, but I also think this. I think people will be much more, because of COVID, yeah, I think that, and because of the backlog in the NHS, I think both the government and people will be much more worried about flu and other respiratory illnesses than they are normally. And I think that, you know, you're already, and I think, so if you start hearing reports, you know, look, let's be honest, we've all watched them, you know, if you are a British political journalist, right, when we talked about the Tories having the election in December, one of the big risks that we discussed on this podcast repeatedly was what happens if there are pictures of trolleys in the corridor and A&Es, ambulances parked up at hospitals, because we know the NHS, you know, often has generally struggles every winter. Generally, the worst point for that is January and February, not December. But if the NHS starts struggling again this winter with flu, and there is a view that you could have a particularly bad flu season because you have less immunity because people have been out and about less, then I think that there is such a heightened perception. You know, look at the Spectator's Data Hub. You know, people know far more about how many available hospital beds there are than they do normally. And so I think for that reason, there will be a massively heightened sensitivity. The first sign of trolleys and corridors, you will have people saying, well, why don't we use some of the methods that we used against COVID, against flu? Why aren't we sending whole classes home as soon as one member of a class gets sick? Why aren't all people who aren't working in kind of manufacturing or construction, why aren't they working from home, working remotely? I think, why aren't people wearing masks at all times on national rail services? I think all of those kind of things will come back because of the concerns in Whitehall about the NHS failing over, the fact that people in the NHS are much more vocal now about the pressures on the service. We've gone through this period where, you know, every day brings you cases and death numbers and discussions about hospital capacity.
So the real Freedom Day, you think, James, is going to be Easter? next year.
Yeah, and you know, and one final thing I would say, that as with COVID, you say, you know, don't make predictions. I also think one of the things we've learned from experience is that all these dates, you know, move to the right. I mean, remember when Christmas was cancelled? Lots of families and people said to each other, well, we'll just have Christmas at Easter. Well, we were still in a pretty strict form of lockdown at Easter.
So Easter 2022, people, mark it in your diaries. Thanks for listening to this not entirely cheery version of Coffee House Shots. But yesterday was made a lot cheerier because one of the podcast listeners who was tuning in, James, to what we were saying on Thursday, and we were having eating those cookies and yeah. Kate was championing her right to it. Well, a reader has the next day sent in beautiful and delicious dispatch of Floozies cookies, which are absolutely delicious and the best ones I have ever eaten. So thank you very much. And by the way, Kate, who's off enjoying the sunshine right now, asked especially to pass on her appreciation. We love cookies here at The Spectator, even though they're not particularly, and James Forsyth, right side of calorie friendly.